music has been wonderful, and we have enjoyed just basically everything here. I mean, that truly, yeah, I'll tell you what, we love Jekyll Island. And we were here 9 years ago, and we love this feast site. But I'll tell you one thing that I really like about being here better than Jekyll Island. There are more babies here than they have in Jekyll Island. Jekyll Island is, to most young people, kind of boring. Now, for people my age, it's peaceful. You can actually walk down the streets. They've got bicycle paths all over. It's just quiet. Cost, what, $5 or $6 just to get on the island every day. And a lot of young people say it's too boring. They want to go to Panama City Beach. But we have a lot of young people here. And I have enjoyed that. And all the babies, they're just, what a pleasure. And we had these stuffed animals. And Lucretia and I went down to Walmart and we got a big Mickey. And right on the same row with us sitting back here is a precious little boy. And between playing with Legos, he's hugging that Mickey. Oh, precious little boy. So I've enjoyed them. Lots of young people and lots of teenagers. And we got a lot of very old people, but we have a lot of teenagers. And why are there so many? I wondered, why are there so many babies here? And I've conjectured maybe people out in this area, they're cold, long, cold winters. I'll just leave that to your own imagination. I've enjoyed the teens. By the way, most of the children have been very well behaved. In fact, to me, I have 9 grandchildren. Even when I see mom and dad getting a little touchy with, you know, sit down. It didn't seem to me the child was doing that much. They seemed pretty well behaved, just being little wiggly children, that was all. And the parents were trying to calm them down. I thought they were pretty well behaved already. I think the children here have set a really good example. I appreciate the child rearing that obviously has been going on. And I've enjoyed the teens. I'll tell you one thing. There's a row of teens back here. There you are. They're in the third, fourth from the back there. They've been in front of us several times. I've enjoyed having them. And I'll tell you what, some of them actually have Bibles and take notes and sing the hymns. Now, I can understand being a teenager. There are things a whole lot more interesting than these boring old men that are giving sermons. There are things on your little phone, you know, games, even doodling and making drawings can be more interesting than an hour-long sermon. And I've watched some of that. See, now, are they going to be in those same seats this afternoon, right? Right in front of me. It hasn't bothered me. I was a teenager. I still remember it very well. And I would like to actually especially give this message to the teenagers. Have you ever thought, how does this group that your parents have you in, how could they be right and sort of claim like 99% of the world is wrong? Isn't that a question? That's a good question. When I was 16, now I'll tell you what, I grew up, and I mentioned I went to a lot of churches, but basically I grew up in an old line church where they really didn't read the Bible. We had sitting right in front where we were in the pews a Book of Common Prayer. And really what it was, the minister would get up and he was dressed in this nice robe, and it wasn't Catholic, but you know, he had things going across and him right here, cloths, really something ladies would really enjoy wearing. Just nice and frilly stuff. And I was even an altar boy, so I wore some of that. And I was a choir boy, so we wore some of that. It was kind of embarrassing, but all the other guys were doing it, so. But when I was 16, I got to wondering, because we hadn't read the Bible, I hadn't read it, but my mother, we were living in Fort Huachuca, Arizona. My dad was in the service, and I was a junior in high school. And my mom had put my grandfather's Bible on the bedside table. And I never looked at it, but I was named after him. He died 3 months before I was born, Frederick Crutchfield. So I'm Frederick Crutchfield Kellers. And I just decided to open that book up. I wonder what's in this book, the Bible. And I don't know if I turn to Leviticus 11 or Deuteronomy 14. But I remember it said that pigs were unclean, swine, and hare, rabbits. And I looked at that and I thought, that is weird. I didn't even realize the Jews didn't eat pork. Didn't cross my mind at that time. Well, I thought, I know it's okay to eat pork and rabbits, because the church I go to hasn't said it's wrong. But why did God do that to the Jews? Was He up in heaven thinking, well, we need to do something to the Jews? So He said to the angels, what can we do to the Jews? What other rule can we give them? And one of the angels said, well, why don't you tell them they can't eat pigs and rabbits? And, well, that sounds like a good idea. We'll do that. Well, I knew that wasn't, I mean, the church we had at Easter, we had, you know, special ham dinners. But I got to thinking, how do I know that this church my parents sent me to, took me to, was right? And I actually, now I believed in God, but I didn't just worship girls. I did believe in a God. And the church we went to, you know, it was one where the minister would say something like, blessed be thy spirit, and then we'd all respond. And then we would kneel down when we were supposed to kneel down and stand up when we were supposed to stand up. And my friends went to churches that didn't do that. And I actually asked God very sincerely, what is the truth? What is the truth? And I didn't get an immediate answer. But could all of those churches be right? Well, how can they all be right? I mean, if you think about it, all believing different things, then you've got the Muslims, Islam, you've got India with Hindus, and vastly different beliefs all across Asia. How do you know that your parents and this group is teaching the truth? Don't you question it? I did. Well, of all things, I didn't want to go to Tombstone, Arizona to senior as a senior. And there was no Sierra Vista. And there was a little unincorporated town called Fry. If any of you know Fort Huachuca, there's a huge city there now called Sierra Vista. But we had to be bused to Tombstone, to the only high school, hour drive on a bus. And it was kind of a tough school. So I told my parents, I want my senior year to go back and live with Grandma and in South Carolina. So they said, well, Fred, we can't just ask Grandma to take you. She may not want to. What? My grandma? My grandma adores me. I've lived with her in the summer. Well, they asked Grandma, and Grandma said, fine. Hey, you want to know how good this was? She gave me her 36 Plymouth. 1957. Boy, was that a fantastic automobile. And she had a 56 Chevy, which she couldn't drive because the steering was off of the shift was off the steering column. See, 36 Plymouth that came off the floor. Still the same age, three speeds. Three forward speeds. But she couldn't do that, but she bought it so that her grandchildren could take her where she needed to go. So she gave me the keys to that. I could take either vehicle and live with Grandma. And that's when I was going to all those different churches with all those cute girls. I had wheels. But I'll tell you, now that's when rock and roll first came out. I mean, that's when, and you know, the first rock song really was Rock Around the Clock. How many of you knew that actually that came out in a movie? How many of you remember the name of the movie? What was it? Blackboard Jungle. That's exactly right. And I remember a couple of friends took me to that movie, and I walking out of there, and that Rock Around the Clock was going. I said, man, what a song that is. Well, I liked rock like all the kids at that time, 1957. But I also liked the blues. And there was a blues station, not in South Carolina, out of Nashville, Tennessee. Of all things, Nashville, Tennessee had a blues station. And it was basically targeted toward the blacks in the South who liked blues. But I liked blues. I thought they had good taste. And they did. I still like the blues. But the blues would come on in the evening. You could only get that station in the winter after the sun went down, when it was cold. And the ionosphere was hard, and the radio signals would bounce off, and it'd bounce all through the South. And WLAC would, about, I think it was at 7 or 7:30, the blues would come on. Now, just before that was the World Tomorrow broadcast. And just before that was Amos and Andy. Now, I liked Amos and Andy. They were hilarious. So I'd tune in Amos and Andy, and then this preacher would come on for a half hour, and then we would get the blues. All the good blues music. But this man who was on The World Tomorrow said, yes, the Bible teaches that you should not be eating pork, and that law has never been done away. I thought, wow, this guy reads the Bible too. I'd never heard that in church. That'd never been brought up in any of the churches I went to. So I began listening to him a little bit. And he said, the United States is in prophecy. The United States, British Commonwealth. Well, I knew that was not true, but he said it was free. So since he said it was free, I wrote for it. But I wanted to make sure the letter said, if it is really free. I didn't want to just say, send it to me and then get a bill. And I got it. It was incredible. I saw scriptures that no church had ever brought up that were important. I began to take the Plain Truth magazine. Well, I graduated high school and went, just to make it short, because we're going to get into the Bible. I think you'll find it interesting. I hope. Even if you don't have a Bible, I hope you listen. But I went to Clemson University. And at Clemson University, by then, while I was there, 2 weeks before the end of the semester, I read about the Sabbath. And there it was in the Bible. It was the seventh day. And Clemson had classes on Saturday. Half of the classes were Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday classes. So I transferred to the University of South Carolina, where they did not have Saturday classes, although to my sorrow, at the end of the semester, they had exams on Saturday. But I would like for you to look at some things that amazed me, because one of the things that amazed me that I found out that just stunned me, one of the most profound things that I just found almost impossible. Look at this world. Can you believe there's a God? You know, a lot of people look at the suffering, the misery, the wars, the starvation, killing little children. And what do they say? I cannot believe in a God who would allow this. Can you sympathize with that feeling? I can. I can sympathize with that. I can understand that. How can there be a God? I mean, even people who believed in God sometimes will have a child die and will say, any God that would allow my child to die. And I prayed. I don't believe there's a God. I can't believe in that kind of a God. But there is a reason. I found that out, and I found the plan of God, which is pictured by these holy days. That just, I was shocked because I began to say and realize there was not a single soul at the university. There was not a friend of mine who knew what was in the Bible. Even if they attended churches that taught the Bible, not a one of them understood it. And that information came to me that I understood it. I would go out to a movie with them and think, there's not a soul in this movie theater. Now remember in South Carolina back in 58, there were only three churches of Worldwide Church of God east of the Mississippi. Though there may have been some people in the state who actually knew, but how many, I don't know. Maybe Church of God, Seventh-day folks, I didn't know any of them. I want to turn to verses that you know very well. But I want to start with Matthew 13. Matthew 13. And this is a parable that you know. It's a parable that is not understood. Oh, the meaning of the soils and the sower. Yes, that's understood. If you had asked me, because, I mean, growing up, at least we heard some parables. You know, the minister in my church would stand up, the one I went to most of all, with my parents, would have a 10 or 15 minute sermon. And it would be my text for today. And so some of those would be parables. And if you'd said to me, well, why did Jesus speak in parables? My answer would have been clear. These were fishermen. These were farmers. He spoke of things they understood. He was trying to make things clear. And then I read in the Bible that he spoke in parables so it would not be clear. So they couldn't understand. That just amazed me. Well, let me, even before we read it, something that you got to think about, even if you don't believe in Adam and Eve and the Garden of Eden, ever ask yourself, why did he put that tree in the garden? I'm talking about the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If he didn't want them to eat it, why put it in there? And that's the title, by the way, of this sermon. Why did God put that tree in the garden? Couldn't he have left it out? And look, why let Satan go into the garden? God knows everything. He knows every sparrow that falls. He knows every hair. Satan had rebelled. Why even allow Satan to be on earth? God can bind Satan. He's going to for 1,000 years. Why not bind him now? Why not bind him years ago? Why even allow him to be on earth? You know, I began to realize this world is doing exactly what God allows. He's allowing us to taste the way of Satan. And he's letting Satan blind us. Satan, it says, has deceived the whole world. Why does he allow that? Because he has a good reason for it. Here in Matthew 13, and you know this so well about he sows and it falls on the wayside and it falls on the stony ground and it falls among the thorns and it falls on the good ground. And that's not the point. I want to get to verse 10 and 11. And the disciples came and said to him, why do you speak to them in parables? He answered and said to them, because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given. Jesus was deliberately hiding the truth. Doesn't seem fair, does it? I mean, first glance, it does not seem fair. My father never knew the truth. I got that book on the United States, British Commonwealth, and prophecy. My aunt was also living with Grandma, and she read it. There is all this about Ephraim and Manasseh and Israel and the promises to Joseph, not to Judah, of the national greatness. And all of that was new to me. Well, my aunt read that and she said, well, that's interesting if it's true. I thought, well, if it's not true, then the Bible's not true. I mean, I was not a Bible scholar by any means. This is my This was my first foray in dipping my little toe other than that Leviticus 11 and Deuteronomy 14 with the unclean meat. I hadn't read the Bible since then. But there it was. And here he is speaking so they will not understand. Wow. It has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven. You know what that means? Everybody else, it wasn't given to them. It's a mystery. Should the truth of God be a mystery? It is. God's truth is a mystery. It's covered with mist. And God's the one who did it. God's the one who is allowing Satan to deceive the whole world. It's given to a few people to know the mysteries, but to them it has not been given. And I want to drop down to 13, verse 13 through 16. This just amazed me when I found this out. Therefore, verse 13, Matthew 13, verse 13. Therefore I speak to them in parables, because seeing they do not see. Yeah, it's okay to see, but you really don't see. And hearing, they do not hear, nor do they understand. Do they have the Bible? Yep. Is it available? Yes. Is it printed by the millions? Yes. Are people reading it by the millions? Yes. They see it. They hear it. But they really don't see and they really don't understand. Verse 14. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, hearing you will hear and shall not understand. And seeing you will see and not perceive. Now this is in Isaiah. And he's quoting Isaiah. Verse 15. For the heart of this people is grown dull. Their ears are hard of hearing. I hope that's not any of us. And their eyes they have closed, lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their heart and turn so that I should heal them. He's talking about spiritual healing. Verse 16. Now he just finished the quote of Isaiah 6. But in verse 16, he says to his disciples, but blessed are your eyes, for they see, and your ears, for they hear. God has to open the ears, and it's just a few. It's just a few. Now, he quoted Isaiah. But he didn't quote everything in Isaiah 6. And you know, if you go back to Isaiah 6, you find the context. And you find, well, I don't know, maybe Jesus did quote more of it, but Matthew just didn't write it all down. I mean, you can't write down everything he ever said. But he may have quoted the whole thing, and he may not. But why don't we go back to Isaiah 6, and I think we'll find something that I hope you'll find interesting. Isaiah 6. Maybe, I don't know how your friends feel about your church at high school or college. Maybe they think you're a little strange, or maybe they think your family is strange. Or maybe they're a little jealous that you're out of school at this time in Steamboat Springs. I've got 5 grandchildren in Italy right now. And I bet their classmates are thinking, oh, I would have liked to have done that. And I've got some down in Southern California, and I've got some grandchildren in Panama City Beach. So their friends may be saying, how do you get it this? Why can't I do this? Well, if we go to Isaiah 6 and start in verse 9. Here's what Jesus quoted. Notice the way it is here in the translation from the Hebrew. We'll start in verse 9. And he said, go and tell this people. Okay, go preach the truth. Tell them. And Jesus did. Keep on hearing, but do not understand. Keep on seeing, but do not perceive. Let them have the Bible. Let them hear the truth. But notice the way it's worded in verse 10. Make the heart of this people dull. Make them. It's not just Satan. God is the one who says, make them not understand. He actually is doing this out of love. And their ears heavy. And notice this part. And shut their eyes. It isn't that these people are choosing it. Some people do choose to close their eyes. Some people grow up choosing to close their eyes. They want to do what they want to do. Shut their eyes. God says shut their eyes. Lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and return and be healed. Now, here's the part that was not quoted either by Jesus or by Matthew. I don't know which one. But it tells the story. Because there is an answer to this. A good reason. Then I said, Lord, how long? Isn't that a good question? How long are you going to let Israel and the whole world be blinded? I mean, humanly, it doesn't seem fair. It is fair when you see the overall picture that today brings. Lord, how long? And he answered, until, listen to this, until the cities are laid waste and without inhabitant. The houses are without a man. The land is utterly desolate. You know what he's talking about. The great tribulation in the day of the Lord. That's how long he's going to leave the world blinded. The Lord has removed men far away, and the forsaken places are many in the midst of the land. And he says, but yet a tenth will be in it and will return and be for consuming as a terebinth tree or as an oak whose stump remains when it is cut down. So the holy seed shall be its stump. Now, that verse 13, there are different understandings. The word where it says for consuming, a lot of the modern translations say for burning. And that is, it's like if you got a stump and there's only 10% left, then you set it on fire to get rid of more. So, little question there. Now, Isaiah talks a lot about being blind. Isaiah talks a lot about being deaf. just like we saw here. But it also says God is going to reverse it and let everybody know the truth. But the fact is, God needs to make sure that everybody that goes into His kingdom is not going to be a Satan. That's a simple answer. Any of you ever work out, build, let weights? I've gone to this exercise room. Now, I don't go exercise to get big muscles. There's no way that that's going to happen to me. I just go exercise so that I can feel good as long as possible. But if you're going to build muscles, if you're going to learn to do a race, I ran in high school and did various things in track, basketball. And you know, if you lift weights, I actually was doing 50 push-ups every morning and every afternoon, every evening. And I was getting some muscles and lifting weights. You notice you cannot build muscles by lifting balloons? That'd be nice, wouldn't it? You're just not going to get pumped up. You got to have a strong downward pull, and then you got to pull against that strong downward pull to build some muscles. Well, the same thing is true with human beings. God is building holy, righteous character, where we learn, no, you don't lie. You don't tell lies. You don't steal. You don't take God's name in vain. You don't commit adultery and you don't kill. We live in a world that does all those things. People say, well, this is a righteous nation. Righteous nation? How many people in this nation take God's name in vain constantly? You go on TV and they bleep out the S word. They bleep out the F word. And then they allow people to just take God's name in vain constantly. They don't bleep that out. That's worse than the F word. Taking God's name in vain. It's one of the Ten Commandments. I taught my children the F word when they were little, because I knew they'd hear it in school. And I said, you know what it means? It means poop. That's it. Just means poop. But you'll hear it when you get to school. Not the F word. That's the S word. Okay. Hey, you come up here. You try it. I understand when we were talking about the four names for Pentecost the other day, and I said, what's the fourth name? And I couldn't hear real well. I thought it was said, somebody said Feast of Harvest, which is what it is in Exodus 23. And I was told, no, somebody said Feast of Ingathering, which is Tabernacles, and probably this eighth day. Anyway, no, I mean, people take God's name in vain constantly, don't they? Well, God wants us to live forever. In order to live forever, we can't be like the little kids who are saying, mine! Didn't we all do that? I'm not knocking little kids. I love little kids. I love babies. I love two-year-olds. But when I was two-year-old, I was a two-year-old. And I was selfish. And then I got to be a teenager and I thought it was cool to use the S word and the F word and damn this and blankety blank that. That was cool. Well, how cool it. And a lot of my friends decided they were going to smoke. They were going to be cool. That's not good for the body. I tried tobacco and tried chewing tobacco and smoking cigarettes. Too much money gone down, burning up. I did get a little pipe in high school. Had a little curved pipe come down there. And when we would drive over from St. Matthews, South Carolina to Orangeburg to check out the ladies, we'd get wooden-tipped cigars. So we'd go to the gas station, get a wooden-tipped cigar, and light it up, and then we were cool. And then we'd put it out till we got to Orangeburg, where the ladies were, where we could light it up again. So I understand what it is, but God cannot allow lying, selfishness, greed, killers, hate, unfaithfulness. Being faithful to our wives is proving to God that we can learn to be faithful despite temptation. By the way, I appreciate coming to church, all the ladies who dress modestly. And I appreciated that exercise room in the warm days when I was on those machines that they had a TV. Because just beyond the TV were a lot of ladies who were not dressed modestly. And you'd say, well, it's Fred Keller's, you're 75 years old. That's right, I'm old, not dead. So it's just nice to not have that temptation at church. Thank you very much. Appreciate that very much. God is allowing Satan to have his way so that all of us will learn Satan's way doesn't work. He's allowing the whole earth to be blinded by Satan, to have war, murder, adultery, broken homes. That's all Satan's way. That's not God's way. God gives us the Ten Commandments. He tells us, don't lie. What a different world if everybody kept the Ten Commandments. There'd be no war. That's murder. That's killing. There wouldn't be broken homes because of adultery. You wouldn't have to have a lock on the door. Can you imagine a world like that? That's the kingdom of God. But God is letting us learn so that we will, Satan's way, so we won't be another Satan. He's letting us learn, and he's going to let the whole world learn. And he's going to let everybody who died be resurrected and come back to life and have that understanding. You know, when he does, and he says, look, you had thousands of years of Satan's way, warfare, hate, murder, places you could not walk, you could not trust. I mean, think of it, ladies. You're out, you're walking down a dark street, and a man's coming. You're nervous because men are evil. Women are too. You just don't know what's going to happen. In Satan's world, then God is going to give us 1,000 years where he will end warfare, he will end the adultery, the lying, the stealing. There'll be unwalled villages. There will not be all the expenses of fighter planes, a standing army. Tanks, battleships, don't have many of those anymore. All of that will be for a good purpose. All that money will be used for good things. And then he will resurrect those who have died. My grandma, my dad, my mom, my brother. And say, which way is better? You lived Satan's way. Now the world had gone 1,000 years my way. Which way is better? So it is blindness for a good purpose and allowing people to go Satan's way for a good purpose. You'd say, well, what about the little baby that died? That little baby will come to life. Let's go to Isaiah 29. Isaiah 29, verses 9 through 13. One sermon cannot cover all of this. Mr. Bauman's sermonette and my sermon cannot. But the fact is, God has opened your eyes. God is requiring, has given us this opportunity, this fantastic truth. It may seem boring if you've grown up in it. Those of us who did not grow up in it, it is not boring at all. You know what I grew up in? There's an ever-burning hell fire. And people who have not done right, people in China who never knew Jesus, there's no name under heaven by whereby men may be saved but that of Christ Jesus. People who died in ignorance, they're all down there in hell. Even one of the founders, fathers in the Catholic Church, Augustine, we tend to say. The question was, where are little babies who died that had never been sprinkled? Catholic Church began to teach that there's a limbus infantium, and that's where they are. They aren't in heaven, they're not in hell. Of course, the Bible doesn't say that. Augustine said, they're in hell. He said, though it grieves me. That's the religion I came up in, not Catholic, but that came out of that. There's an ever-burning hellfire, and all these people who died, you know, as being sinners, they are in hell forever and ever. Let me tell you, the Church of God's not boring to me, because that's what I came up in. But you know, if you grow up in the Church of God, I agree, it can be boring. It can be. It's not, but it can seem that way. I'm not picking on anybody here. That's just the way it is. Things we grow up with can seem trite and boring and not interesting at all. We've heard that. Yeah, I've heard that. That's what I wanted my kids to say when they went to school and somebody said the F word or the S word. Say, I heard that in Friday night Bible study at home. Can't be that exciting. So here in Isaiah 29 and verse 9, pause and wonder, blind yourselves and be blind. There you go. God's saying, be blind. But not with, they're drunk, but not with wine. This is not physical drunkenness. They stagger, but not with intoxicating drink. Now, why are they blind and drunk? This is spiritually. Why are they spiritually blind and drunk? Verse 10. It's not just Satan. It's God's will. For the Lord has poured out on you the spirit of deep sleep. Spiritually asleep. All of the Muslims. By far the majority of Christians. Claim to be Christian. You say, well, they can't all be wrong. How can they all be right? They all believe different things. The spirit of deep sleep and has closed your eyes, namely the prophets, and he has covered your heads, namely the seers. The whole vision has become to you like the words of a book that is sealed. Now, he's talking about the Bible. Which men deliver to one who is literate, saying, read this, please. And he says, I cannot, for it is sealed. Then the book is delivered to one who is literate, saying, read this, please. And he says, I'm not literate. Verse 13. Therefore the Lord said, inasmuch as these people draw near to me with their mouths, yes, we can say those people who are sincere Christians. They are sincere. They may be better than us. We are not better than they. Why did God not call my father? 2 degrees and 4 years, colonel in the army. Why did God not call my brother? scientist. They have an award at Clemson named after my brother. Frank Kellers III. God didn't call him. God called the class clown. Can you believe that? Inasmuch as these people draw near to me with their mouths and honor me with their lips, but have removed their hearts far from me, and their fear toward me is taught by the commandment of men. God is called the weak of the world, not the great. It isn't that we're here because we're better, more special. God is making it. You know why we're special? Because of Jesus in us. But it's not us, it's Him. Their fear toward me is taught by the commandment of men. And you might say the commandment of Satan. He's counterfeited all the things of God. And if we'll drop down to verse 17 and 18, he gives a promise that he is going to change things. He says, "Is it not yet a very little while till Lebanon shall be turned into a fruitful field?" Lebanon is not a fruitful field, but it will be. "And the fruitful field be esteemed as a forest." Now notice verse 18. "In that day, the deaf shall hear the words of the book." That's spiritually deaf. See, God has not called the world. The reason your parents are here is because, as far as the world goes, they're not great. Now, maybe your parents are, because it says not many mighty, not many noble. And maybe your parents are mighty and noble. But my children's parent, father, was not mighty and noble. And God called me. Because I was part of the weak of the world. But He's called me to be strong through Jesus Christ. "In that day the deaf shall hear the words of the book, and the eyes of the blind shall see out of obscurity and out of darkness." Now actually, what we read here, part of what we read is it was read this morning in the sermonette. And I want to just turn back and see that again in Romans 11, verse 1, which already Mr. Bauman quoted, but you'll see in Romans chapter 11, it's going to quote what I just read to you out of Isaiah 29. So what I read to you in Isaiah, Jesus quoted Isaiah chapter 6, Paul quoted Isaiah chapter 29. Romans 11, verse 1. Now, we haven't gotten to the quote yet. And we read this earlier in the sermonette. "I say then, has God cast away His people? Certainly not, for I also am an Israelite of the seed of Abraham of the tribe of Benjamin." But then we drop down to verse 7 through 10. "What then? Israel has not obtained what it seeks." Israel is seeking God and has not obtained God or the truth. "But the elect have obtained it." Who are the elect? How many people are chosen to be president? One. All the rest of them running are not chosen. When he says the elect, he isn't choosing just one, but he is electing to take this one, that one, that one, that one, and here they are in this room. How many people in the state of Colorado, all Wyoming, this entire area? Now, we're not the only church of God. I know that. But how many are actually keeping these days and understand it? How many have been elected? So that's the elect have obtained it, and the rest were hardened or blinded. Just as it is written, quote, Isaiah 29, God has given them a spirit of stupor, eyes that they should not see, and ears that they should not hear to this very day. And David says, let their table become a snare and a trap, a stumbling block and a recompense to them. Let their eyes be darkened, that they may not see, and bow down their back always. I say then, this was read, have they stumbled that they should fall? Certainly not, but through their fall to provoke them to jealousy, salvation has come to the Gentiles. So really, Mr. Bauman read these verses down here, verse 25 and 26, and it's really being based off of what we read in Isaiah that he's talking about. And he says, verse 25, I do not desire, brethren, that you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest you should be wise in your own opinion, that hardening in part has happened to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in, and so all Israel will be saved. He read verse 32. For God has committed them all to disobedience, that he might have mercy on all. God has allowed this world to go the way it has, out of mercy, out of love. And if we will go, and he read the verses, how God desires all to be saved. Let's go to Ezekiel 37, and I won't spend a long time in it. But God is going to resurrect and give a first chance, not a second chance, a first chance. You are not better by yourself, nor am I, than all the people out here. God loves everybody. This is the feast that is the ultimate proof that God loves everybody, including the dead. And He is allowing some suffering to teach us character and salvation. Just like spanking a child, I was spanked. My children were spanked. I needed it a lot more than I got. My children needed it. It's a way to build character. Verse 12 through 14 gives the valley of the dry bones. He says, verse 12, therefore prophesy and say to them, thus says the Lord God, behold, O my people, I will open your graves and cause you to come up from your graves and bring you into the land of Israel, not off to heaven. Then you shall know that I am the Lord when I have opened your graves, O my people, and brought you up from your graves. I will put my spirit in you. Those in the first resurrection will be spirit. These are people who are flesh and bone and sinew and skin, and they receive the Spirit in them. And when they receive the Spirit in them, their eyes will be opened, the blindness will be removed, the ears will be unstopped, and they will hear and know the truth. He says, and you shall live, and I will place you in your own land. Then you shall know that I, the Lord, have spoken it and performed it, says the Lord. And then in verse 23. We've come to time. I'm going to skip it. I've enjoyed it. It's been wonderful to be here with you. But my time is up.